Welcome to another edition of the Community Calendar for Wednesday, the 29th of March. The PDX 9/11 Truth Alliance will be holding a meeting tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. at Laughing Horse Books. That address is 3652 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The PDX 9/11 Truth Alliance is the grassroots contact for the 9/11truth.org, which investigates and publicizes the full truth surrounding September 11th, 2001, and by working to achieve this with participatory education, grassroots media, and justice campaigns. For more information, please call 503-287-3473. That's 503-287-3473, or visit the web at pdx911.blogspot.com. You've been listening to the Community Calendar. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring, KBOO News and Public Affairs, and this is KBOO's Wednesday Talk Radio. And our guest will be, we don't have him right now, our guest will be James Ridgway, who is the Washington correspondent for Village Voice, and he's written for many magazines, and he's written 15 books, and he's also co-directed the film Blood in the Face and Feed. So anyway, this he has written a book called The Five Unanswered Questions About 9/11, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Bad news is a glitch has prevented us from having James Ridgway on at this time. However, we will be having him at a future time, so we are working on that. The good news is that, well, besides that, we will have James Ridgway in the future. That opens up some time for your calls. You can call us here at 231-8187. We will still be talking about 9/11 and, you know, what really went on. And I think what I'm going to do is I will kind of give a little resume of James Ridgway's book, The Five Unanswered Questions About 9/11. And they are, number one, these are from his book, Why Couldn't We Stop an Attack from the Skies? Number two, Why Didn't the Government Protect Us? Who was running the country? Number three, Why Didn't We Know What Was Coming? Number four, Did U.S. allies help make the attacks possible? And number five, Why couldn't the 9/11 Commission get to the truth? Now, those are James Ridgway's five unanswered questions. Some of us may think there are a lot more unanswered questions, but let's start out with those. Why couldn't we stop an attack from the skies? Well, he goes into a lot of the details of what the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, officials, how they were told by the pilots of these planes that were being hijacked. And basically, I think he is saying that there's a tremendous amount of kind of bureaucratic goof-ups and inertia and just general not being aware of what was going on. And that sort of explains it. Well, that may explain it for some folks, but not for others. But we have a caller already. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I got a question to me that is probably the most important question to ask is, who stood to gain the most from a 9/11 attack?
That's a good question. Who do you think?
Well, the people that are gaining now, the one that have used this situation to deeply entrench himself, to garner more power, basically try to subjugate the world. You know, 9/11 has happened throughout history quite often. Matter of fact, back in ancient times, Nero had a 9/11.
The burning of Rome.
The burning of Rome and blaming it on the Jews. So that was Rome's 9/11. Germany had a 9/11 in the Reichstag.
The Reichstag fire.
The Reichstag.
Yeah.
So, I mean, history repeats itself. And you know, the thing about it that people that forget it is doing the repeated. And, you know, we see what's happening here. I just want to say one thing before I get out of here is that the situation that that's happening in France right now is something that should be happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, until Americans get to a point that where we're ready to just shut things down through a general strike, ain't nothing going to change.
That could be. Well, you know, you had, what, at least 500,000 people marching in L.A. Now, they were marching over the immigration issue, which is not too far removed from the issues that people in France were concerned about. They also had a 24-hour general strike in England, and there they were concerned about, you know, pensions and things like that. So these things are happening.
Well, that's true, but I would think that since our freedom is being slowly taken away from us, that we would have a bigger reason to strike than over money.
I agree.
And
yeah.
One last thing before I get out of here, you know, I just want to say that until we start doing something, stations like KABU, all the free presses that we're striving for, until we start doing some serious things, these mediums are no more than chat lines.
Well, I hope they're more than that. I mean, people need to talk to each other before they go on to other things, you know. If you're not even talking to each other, how are you going to get to, say, a general strike or a big demo or any of these other activities?
Well, man, that's true, but, you know, at some point, you know, the rubber got to meet the road.
That's true.
At some point, we're going to have to get moved from the theoretical to the practical. And everybody should know that people in power ain't going to step down on their own.
That's true, yeah.
So, anyway, that's my for the day.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, do I see a green light going on? Is there another call? Yes, there is. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that KABU is way more than a chat line all to me, and it seems as though people have stopped talking to their neighbors and have just become angrier and angrier watching the television. And I think KABU is a great opportunity to turn off the corporate news and listen to your neighbors and
That's
figure
true.
Out what's going
yes.
on.
I find that myself. Before I discovered KABU, I used to get real mad at the stuff I read about in the papers. But, you know, you come home to your house and you open a can of beer and you sit there in your kitchen getting mad. That doesn't do anybody any good. So anyway, when you get, you know, a station like KABU, you can talk to people and, you know, we can all get mad together and maybe do something about it.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to take it for granted living here in Portland, hearing KABU on the radio. But in places where I've lived that don't have community radio, there's not nearly as much involvement from the community and mm-hmm. dialogue going on.
That's true. Okay, thanks for calling. The you know, the first in the Bill of Rights, one of our rights is the right to bear arms and to alter our government. You know, if you can't do it by elections, and how are you going to alter our government? You know, the last two presidential elections were highly questionable. You have these electronic touchscreen voting machines. They are kind of falling out of favor now. There's so many glitches that have been come up with those, but they're still in use in many states, as far as I know.
Well,
and so if the voting is rigged, what is there left for people to do? I think that's a good question. Okay, let's go on to our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about 9/11.
Sure.
I guess I wanted to talk about some of the hard evidence around it. The most amazing thing that I saw, I think, was the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7.
Right.
Have you seen that?
I have seen videos of it. Yes, it's just amazing. Now, it's interesting. This was not part of James Ridgway's book.
Uh-huh.
He didn't go into that. I was hoping to ask him about that later on, but I think we'll have him on the air sometime in the future. But anyway, yes, why did Building Number 7 collapse when it never got hit by an airplane?
Or no building fell into it.
Fell into it, and as far as people could tell, it was very small little fires on one floor or something like that.
That's right. It was just on one side. I mean, the vast overall structural integrity of the building was very well intact. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can see it. CBS News, Dan Rather reporting live on September 11th. You know, and there was also another video that was better clarity. But anyways, and then there was also Larry Silverstein in the PBS documentary. He talks about pulling it. Now, his excuse was that he meant pull the firefighters, but the other argument is that our argument is that it was pull it means a controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also in that same video, they were demolishing the rest of World Trade Center Building 6, and they said, we're getting ready to pull Building 6. So it's like, to me, somebody was doing a controlled demolition on it. But mm-hmm. the thing is, don't believe me or anybody else. You know, go out on the Internet, do the World Trade Center Building 7 video, Google it, and watch the video clips out there. They're out there.
Sure, see it for yourself. You know, now, one thing they say about Building 7 is that there were, I don't know, I've heard different figures. There was a lot of diesel fuel or something stored in some tank, and I'm not sure whether it was on the 23rd floor or down in the basement or where, but, Mayor Giuliani had some kind of an emergency office there, and they had all this diesel fuel stored there. So I don't know if that would have made any... it had any effect on it, but...
Again, those fires are so small, and they're just on mm-hmm. one very small part.
Well, if they had hit that tank, wherever it was, then you'd think you'd have a huge explosion on whatever floor that fuel was stored, but that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you still have a problem with mm-hmm. Taking down a modern steel skyscraper.
That's true.
Another interesting thing is that Charlie Sheen has actually come out now and started talking about this. So what I'm afraid of is that maybe actors got us into 9/11, and it might take us actors to get us out of 9/11.
Well, anybody can get the word out.
Yeah, it's hard mm-hmm. to do.
So. Well, there's that professor at Brigham Young University in Salt Lake City, a physics professor, Stephen Jones, I think his name is, and he is saying that, there's no way that those buildings, he's talking about the two twin towers, there's no way that they could have collapsed the way they did just from the airplane,
Unfortunately, a guy like that, he gets on like Tucker Carlson, MSNBC, and they just kind of eat him alive. They're playing for him. They're ready for him. They play politics, quick talk, and they kind of beat him out, which is too bad. But I don't think they can keep holding this back for too long.
Probably not. I hope not. And, one encouraging thing is that in New York City, they took some poll. I think something like about half of New Yorkers believe that that the Bush administration was aware of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that leaves it open as to whether they just let it happen or whether they made it happen. But
that's
anyway,
true.
A lot of people right there in New York are very suspicious of the whole story. So, you just have to keep going after that story.
Yeah, I mean, I would just encourage anybody who's skeptical about what we're talking about to go out on the Internet, find those World Trade Center Building 7 videos with Dan Rather and, download the little clips and watch them for themselves and make their own decision.
Yeah, and also there is a 9/11 group that meets. I think they're meeting tonight at Laughing Horse Books. Sort of unfortunate because their meeting time conflicts with the Peak Oil Group that also meets on Wednesday night. So it's if you're interested in both of those, you sort of have a tough decision to make. But anyway, for folks who want to hear more, there is a 9/11 group is meeting at Laughing Horse Books tonight at 7, and I think the first hour they take care of business. They're planning events in the future, and then I think after the first hour they look at videos and they talk about the latest news and things like that.
Yeah, I've been out to them. They're worthwhile going to because
mm-hmm.
They'll have the videos all set up for you. But anyways, thanks, Pear. I appreciate your time and all your guys' time there down there at Cabeville.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Okay, take care.
Well, let's see. We're talking about, we don't have any more calls right now. We're talking about James Ridgway's 5 unanswered questions. Another one is number 2 question is, why didn't the government protect us? Who was running the country? And he raised some interesting thing. Well, they haven't talked about elsewhere. When 9/11 happened, of course, George Bush was in Sarasota, Florida, talking, doing a little kind of photo op at a grade school there. And he said that, he had seen you know, building, you know, the plane crash into the building on TV. Well, at the time he was at that school was, I think, about at least an hour before there was any TV footage at all. So the question is, what did George Bush see? When did he see it? I mean, it's an obvious, misstatement for whatever reason, you know. Maybe he's just kind of got it mixed up in his mind. But anyway, he said that he had seen it, and he couldn't have. Another question that James Ridgway goes into in his book is, you know, where was Donald Rumsfeld in all this? Now, George Bush was, he was put on a plane, and he's flown to one Air Force base and then another Air Force base. He was kind of flying around the country and all most of that day. Meanwhile, Dick Cheney was kind of running things from the bunker underneath the White House. Where was Donald Rumsfeld? He was kind of seemed to be out of the loop completely, even though the order of command would have put him in charge of what's going on, you know, the aircraft flying up to intercept the attackers and all that. Anyway, we have another caller on the line. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Per. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
You know, these videos about 9/11, there are quite a few of them. I bet they didn't expect that, you know, whoever did it, that there would be a French video team there doing another job that were able to capture the second tower, well, the first tower,
mm-hmm.
you know, being blown up. But, well, another plug for Laughing Horse. We've got a bunch of videos there to rent, you know, Huff Schmid, and there's the one I just saw. I think it just recently came out. It's an Alex Jones one called Martial Law,
mm-hmm.
and he's done a really good job of collecting, you know, all the good videos from various places, and he has like little architectural model pictures of all the buildings, and you know, pointing out the relative distances between them and so forth. Some really good footage on that, and among other things in that video, a bunch of stuff about the Bush family, you know, the grandfathers who supported the Nazis and helped them get started and everything. So, you know, like if you're not able to go on the web or something like that, then you can certainly rent a number of these videos at Laughing Horse, and that's just what I wanted to say.
Well, that's good. You know, Laughing Horse is a real community resource, you know, just like KBOO, and they have lots of good books there, and probably more, you know, more books that we like to read, you know, that deal with, you know, with compelling social issues and the empire and 9/11, all the issues that we're concerned about. There they are. They're all concentrated in one little bookstore right there on 37th and Division.
That's right. Thank you, Per.
Well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
So, we got another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I listen, to the late night George Norrie Art Bell show, which is a non-political show.
Mm-hmm.
And they very rarely, you know, will get into controversial political subjects. But now they're talking about 9/11.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, they're quoting Charlie Sheehan, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about a lot of the things that we've discussed here on KBOO, and I find it to be rather significant because that show has the greatest listenership in the nation, so it has a great influence on a lot of people, and the fact that this information is spread on that show is significant, and I think can be very helpful as
mm-hmm.
far as bringing this information to the attention of the American people.
Well, that's good. I think a lot of this is sort of going under the radar. I think a lot more people are thinking along these lines. You know, the folks who put out the mainstream media, they're based in kind of Washington, D.C., and New York, and L.A., and a lot of the stuff doesn't get to them. They sort of live in a bubble world, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and we can only hope that, you know, that more people will, you know, will start understanding what kind of a country we live in. But anyway, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
You know, James Ridgway in his book, it's really, it's a very interesting book. It's a good place to start. Ridgway kind of, he focuses on, you know, the many, many warnings that people in Washington got about impending attacks. He talks a lot about that. He goes into the, you know, what were the, where was the Air Force? And he brings out a lot of, stuff on that. And he also goes into, our allies like Saudi Arabia and Pakistan and their linkages, you know, with the Bush people and with Al Qaeda and all that. So, and then he goes into the, you know, the 9/11 commission and why it, kind of skated over all the unpleasant stuff and kind of produced a sort of a bogus, conclusion. So that's what James Ridgway focuses on. And it is valuable for that. It kind of, in a way, you might say that it establishes the kind of a consensus minimalist position, you know, that it's very hard for anybody to deny what Ridgway is saying. Now, some people I know in the truth community will say that he could have got a lot further, and this is probably true. Why he, you know, he could have written a book five times as long and gone into all that if he'd wanted to. But there are some other questions that, you know, that remain besides the five. One interesting one, well, one of the callers brought it up was, you know, how these buildings fell so quickly, you know, where this has never happened before or since, where any kind of a skyscraper fell that quickly as a result of a fire, especially building number 7. So that has been talked about. Another question right around the time of 9/11, airline stocks, United and American Airlines stocks, were kind of sold short. In other words, some big investors were betting that the value of those stocks would fall, and they made orders in the stock market, and they made lots of money on this. In fact, I think something like a couple million dollars went unclaimed because whoever made the order didn't get to collect the money before it got a little too hot. So there is a very intriguing window that should be explored, and it hasn't been as far as I know. And, you know, it should be, you know, when you buy a stock, these things are, you know, a matter of record. You don't just buy them totally anonymously. Anyway, we have another caller on the line. So, hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. So 9/11, as anybody who's looked at any of it would agree, is a very complex issue and sequence of events. Things were happening very rapidly on the days leading up to and on that day. So anybody that takes a first look at it and is going to say, my God, this is overwhelming. You know, how do I start to ferret out the truth? But my suggestion to anyone who's just getting started looking at this would be to focus on one event, and that is the collapse of Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start to research what the so-called 9/11 Commission did and the official government story, you'll find that Building 7 is a very troubling issue for people who want to believe the official story.
I don't think they mentioned it at all, did they?
Well, that's mm-hmm. the point I'm going to get mm-hmm. to here. Not too long ago, some of the cable TV channels were bombarding the public with so-called, quote-unquote, documentaries about 9/11. There was about a month period there where on the History Channel, for example, one Sunday, they ran 9/11, quote, documentaries, unquote, back-to-back for almost 12 hours, And it coincidentally just happened to be taking place about the time that George Bush was getting a lot of attention in the news media because his ratings were dropping very fast. And lo and behold, all these documentaries start showing up about the official story in 9/11 and what a great response the Bush administration had to those attacks, so on and so forth. But in those documentaries, Building 7 was omitted almost completely, and when they did mention it, it was a very brief mention with no discussion of what happened or anything. And in the official FEMA report even, which I have read, they state in the report that they don't know what brought down Building 7. You'll hear people say things about, oh yeah, we know what brought it down, blah, blah, blah. But if you read the official FEMA report on the failure of the World Trade Center buildings, they don't know what brought down Building 7. So I would suggest to anyone who is just getting started, don't spend a lot of time trying to track down all these other troubling questions, and there are many. Focus on Building 7 because it is the one issue that the official story and the 9/11 Commission totally want to ignore.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems to be the way that governments do these things. If something can't be answered, they just pretend it doesn't exist.
That's right.
And, there's so many things are ignored. Like there were witnesses, firemen and everybody who were saying they heard explosions inside the Twin Towers, not just from the planes, but down in the basement and stuff like that.
One of the members of the 9/11 Truth Movement here in Portland was on top of the situation enough on the day of 9/11 to pop a tape into his VCR and start recording the official broadcasts that were taking place from that day from the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredible to hear what these reporters were reporting from the streets on that day about hearing explosions, trying to interview policemen about explosions, hearing firemen say, we think that there's explosive devices in the buildings. And wouldn't you know that all of that reporting was deleted and was never seen again on television after that day, but he has it on tape. So very interesting to watch what really was happening on that day and what was filtered out. And in fact, Building 7, the collapse of Building 7 was shown, I believe, one day and part of the next day, and then it was erased from any further discussion on public broadcast or major media broadcasts.
Mm-hmm. So instead of connecting the dots, they erase the dots.
Hey, that's a very good way of putting it, because that's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for your call.
All right.
Well, let's proceed. Another interesting thing that has not been reported very much was the Odigo instant messaging service. Now, Odigo is a... It has its headquarters in New York, I think a couple blocks from the Twin Towers, and they also have an office in Israel, in a suburb of Tel Aviv. And apparently, now this, I got this from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, January 9th, 2002. And I'll just read a little bit of it. Odigo, the instant messaging service, says that two of its workers received messages 2 hours before the Twin Towers attack on September 11th, predicting the attack would happen. And the company has been cooperating with Israeli and American law enforcement, including the FBI, in trying to find the original sender of the message predicting the attack. Mika Makover, CEO of the company, said the two workers received the messages immediately after the terror attack, informed the company's management, which immediately contacted the Israeli security services, which brought in the FBI. So, in other words, here we have 2 hours before the attacks happened, these two employees of Odigo were told by, they were contacted by phone, apparently by somebody they didn't know who it was, but they were told 2 hours ahead of time that these attacks would happen. Now, I don't know who, this is, somebody knew it was going to happen. Now, whether they were the terrorists themselves or who knows who they might have been, according to one story, the phone messages, the warnings were accompanied by some anti-Semitic stuff, so it's really hard to say. But anyway, there you have it. This was from Haaretz, a reputable newspaper a little-known fact about 9/11. But we have some more callers on the air. Let's go. Hi, you're on the air.
Per, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
One of my questions, I don't even have a question. I'm convinced that there was government complicity in 9/11.
Okay.
And I think the parallel between the Nazis burning the Reichstag mm-hmm. and then basically stealing the government is apt.
Mm-hmm.
It's an appropriate parallel. But, you know, we're always, but then what kind of makes me wonder is why, I mean, what do you do with the information? And there's a talk about impeaching Bush, and I think there's probably several grounds upon which President Bush could be charged. Now, whether the Senate would ever convict him is another question. But one basis for an impeachment is this whole issue about how the crime scene was treated. Now, I've used the example that say my house burns down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quickly sweep up my house and then put my insurance claim in and say, give me my, you know, the value of my house. I want my, you know, so on.
Mm-hmm. You ship all the evidence off somewhere.
I would be in hot water, wouldn't I?
You sure would.
Would the insurance company be very skeptical about my claim?
Yes, they would.
And wouldn't they want a criminal investigation, a fire inspector to look at the site?
Mm-hmm.
How is the example I posed any different from what happened at 9/11?
Not really any different at all. It was quickly carted away. Was it taken to a landfill or was it?
No, it was convenient. It was the metal, apparently, when it blew up. It was when it collapsed. The length of metal, much of it was conveniently of the same length as a flatbed truck, so it could quickly be hauled away. You know where the metal went? It went to China.
Oh, okay.
We're buying it back in the form of rebar and toys. And this is what I think is so. It's a felony to impede a crime scene. And I would say that the White House. I don't know the chain of events that determined the quick cleanup and mm-hmm. you know the whole you know the spirit of it was we've been attacked, we've got to get ready for war, let's so on and so forth, clean up this mess, and then we'll remember the dead. You know, this kind of
right.
a thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it's very interesting because the very same thing happened in Oklahoma City.
Same technique.
The wreckage of the Murrah building was cleaned up. The site was fenced off, and all the evidence was carted away. And you know, it's like, what does it take to make people suspicious? You know, they keep doing this. I think in Oklahoma City, they gave this really phony excuse that seeing the wreckage every day would just make people in Oklahoma City feel so bad. You know, that for their own to improve the morale, they had to take away this horrible site.
Well, there's nothing like improving morale and healing mm-hmm. the hurt when you have authentic justice and
right.
an investigation. Now, here's my closing question to you, and this is, why is this such a uncomfortable thing to discuss? And I want to commend you for taking this on, because I noticed that I think Michael Rupert at one point said, let's just hang this up.
Well,
this is a no-win situation. We can't get anywhere.
Well, what he's saying is that he believes that the peak oil crisis is even more important than 9/11. And so that's what he is saying.
Well, see, this is such a heinous act. Maybe
mm-hmm.
because we don't have a classical, I don't know, we don't know who did it. So it's just, we're just entertaining conspiracies and it, but it's, I don't know. I mean, it's such an evil, evil thing that it's hard for anybody to wrap their mind around and accept. But then once you've accepted it, it's like, again, to personalize this, if I was living next door, I don't know. What's the parallel? Someone who's committed a murder and they haven't been prosecuted. What do you think?
I think a parallel would be like living in a mafia family.
You know
what Papa does for a living, but you don't talk about it. You know?
Maybe that's it. Maybe mm-hmm. really, and then I'm going to just close out with we do live in a philocracy. We live in a society where liars have made an art of lying and hold power through their lies. It's a philocracy. That's
mm-hmm.
what we've got.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. I think we have another caller on the line. Hi, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Per.
Hey.
Yeah. Another aspect of 9/11,
uh-huh.
it seems to me that really has to be discussed, is the way the U.S. and the British and the French before them have operated to, in fact, support and fund and train the very people who were most involved in, at least in flying the planes, the
That's
very
true.
Groups.
Uh-huh.
It
yeah.
seems to me that U.S. policy in the Middle East to sort of maintain control and to destroy the secular, the left, that is like Mossadegh in 56 or in 54, and destroying all of the currents in all of the progressive currents and democratic currents in Middle Eastern life, and instead supporting these right-wing religious groups
that's
they
true.
Thought that they could always control, like
yeah.
Osama bin Laden. Who
well,
is,
sure. Well,
I mean,
that's one
the
thing.
Most direct, obvious.
Well, Ridgway goes into that quite a lot in his book.
Oh, does he?
Oh, yeah. Yes, and he talks about, you know, the Saudi royal family, what they did to support bin Laden, and also Pakistan's intelligence service, the ISI. And it's very interesting that the general who headed that intelligence service, apparently he helped send $100,000 to Mohammed Atta, one of the reputed hijackers, and he was also happened to be in Washington on the very day, on 9/11. He was there meeting with people. So Ridgway goes into this. It's fascinating stuff.
Does you know? Ridgway also talk about what preceded that for the last, 100 years? Was the systematic annihilation of progressive and any kind of democratic force in the Middle East and the elevation of these sort of royal families
mm-hmm.
and military clans to just control the nation and just obviously no one even disputes it in the service of the big oil companies.
Right. Well, he goes into that a bit. He sort
yeah.
of starts in 1979 when Carter was president, and this is when Zbigniew Brzezinski, he had the great idea, that if he could get the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan, that they would have their own little Vietnam, you see. And so he provoked the Soviets into invading. You know, he was sending aid to these Mujahideen, because when the communists controlled Afghanistan, women didn't have to wear burqas. They were able to get jobs. They had schools for boys and girls and a lot of things. And so, but this really aroused a lot of the religious extremists. And so Brzezinski sent aid to these people, and sure enough, the Soviets fell into the trap, and they got stuck in a 10-year war in Afghanistan. So that's kind of when it began. And, Brzezinski still is very proud. He thinks it was a good move. He still talks about it, And so, then from there, that's just kind
well,
of the
well,
beginning
you know,
of the...
Well, it's classic blowback, mm-hmm. though, isn't it?
It is. It sure is.
I
sure.
mean, they created forces that forced the Soviets to give up a few... I mean, it was the internal contradictions of the Soviet Union that killed them, although their foreign policy was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly bled them in Afghanistan. But, in fact, it was a successful ploy. The problem is that, in fact, they destroyed every force in the Middle East that could create a stable and decent state.
That's
true. And a relatively honest and productive use of the vast wealth that they're accumulating.
Right.
That's going to run out soon.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, that's another point, it seems to me. It could well be that as Saudi Arabia, right now, of course, oil prices are funding these incredible developments in Dubai and Saudi Arabia, but entirely wasteful sorts of tourist endeavors that ultimately are going to collapse. And, in fact, the Middle East will continue, therefore, to be, just completely unstable and leading and developing a whole lot of people who are ready to die in their struggle against
mm-hmm.
imperialism.
Well, the rational thing to do with oil running low or prices going up is, and the International Energy Agency has a treaty where the requiring rationing of scarce oil. And so that would be the rational thing to do, because there's still a lot of oil left in the ground. It's just getting more and more expensive with rising demand. So, the capitalist system is, we ration by whoever can pay for it. Well, a humane way to ration scarce oil is to ration it by need. You know, give it to the farmers so they can feed people. Give it to, you know, health services and things like that. And so that is probably what's going to have to happen. But that's a whole new topic, and I hope we can get onto that, too, someday. Anyway, hey, thanks for calling.
The war on truth, that's 9/11, and disinformation in the anatomy of terrorism. That's the book by Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed. I've had the good fortune of interviewing Nafiz a couple of times. He is a brilliant researcher from Brighton, England, of all places. Brighton, a tiny little sleepy seaside town, hatching an amazing political analyst like Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed.
He's just a young guy, too, I believe.
Yeah, he's like not even 30.
Yeah,
he's like
right.
not even 30. He's mm-hmm. like the director of this global research institution. He's like a new father. He's like an all-round amazing, brilliant guy. 503-232-8818. You can ask for your copy of The War on Truth, 9/11 and Disinformation in the Anatomy of Terrorism. When you call 503-232-8818 and make your minimum pledge of...